Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you.
Hello, hello. I'm Charlotte Farrell, host of Echo Wisdom Conversations, a podcast component of the Echo Wisdom Nature Guide and Forest Medicine Training Program. Today, you're going to have a masterclass facilitated by Dr. Carrie Crow, who is the founding director of Echo Wisdom, a healing life balance preserve that you're going to hear more about. And she will be interviewing, helping us to understand and be more aware of Jill Satterfield, who is a renowned international mindfulness meditation lecturer, a speaker, a curriculum developer, and the founder of a yoga meditation system that many people are asking about, but today you will hear about and get an update. So, Dr. Carrie, will you tell us a few more things about the Echo Wisdom Preserve? Because when I talk to people with preserve, they have images of wild animals. How can people be out in the world? So tell us a little bit about Echo Wisdom and then how this connects over to bringing us two speakers and teachers such as Jill Satterfield.
I'm a bit distracted, I have to say, having Jill here. It's just so tremendous. So Echo Wisdom Forest Preserve is over 200 acres. It's up near Algonquin Park in Ontario, Canada. We do have wild roaming moose, bear, lynx, deer, you name it, fox. And now that the snow has come on the ground, we can see who's around, who we're sharing the land with. Yeah, so this initiative came from, personal experience with disability and chronic illness, chronic pain, and finding a refuge through mindfulness and mindful nature connection and contemplative practices like contemplative photography out on the land. And so, we live off grid in the forest. And basically what happened was I was living in the city and I had chronic migraine headaches. So 60% minimum of my time, I was completely incapacitated by pain. So you called me Dr. Carrie. I haven't heard Dr. Carrie from doctor for a long time, but I have worked as a professor and a researcher, health researcher and a professor of disability studies. But when I acquired my disability, my life changed dramatically. And so I was living with a lot of pain and a lot of time just sort of working on coping with that pain. But when I moved to the forest, I noticed some shifts. And one of those shifts was, for me, it alleviated my migraines. And so that allowed me more time to do creative things with my, photos on the land. And then that led to sharing my videos and photos. And then that led to offering programs and thinking of bringing back my work in neuroscience and thinking about how do we do this kind of programming, nature-based mindfulness for people with disabilities. So we get internet, we're up on top of a hill, so we get satellite internet and we just run it from the forest.
And it's wonderful to note that after saying what happens there, that we don't have to say symptoms might include and then have 15 minutes of this may kill you, this may cause you not to be able to breathe, but really how it opens you up to feeling how nature and time in nature can be healing, an actual evidence of a person who's done that and is now through podcasts, through classes, enabling other people to know about mindfulness and the whole range of things that come into nature-based studies. Mm. Now you are introducing us to someone that has made marks around the world with speaking to people, doing workshops, helping people understand mindfulness. And could you tell us, bring us a little bit more information about Jill?
Yeah, well, I'm just so delighted to have Jill Satterfield join us here for our Echo Wisdom conversation today. And I would like to offer this introduction so that people know who she is. She's an international Dharma and mindfulness meditation teacher, and she integrates somatics, which is body awareness, with contemplative psychology, and has 35 years of experience engaging deeply in Buddhist teachings and practices, including numerous silent retreats. She works with a number of places, including Spirit Rock. With her primary teacher, Jill was in fact the first to offer a mindful movement component to the silent retreats at Spirit Rock and the Insight Meditation Center. And she's been doing these kinds of things for over 25 years. And she's been featured in and has written for many publications. Jill founded a training and service organization called the School for Contemplative Action, Mindfulness and Somatic Practices for Chronic Pain, Illness, Trauma, and Addictions. Her applied embodied mindfulness trainings are part of UCLA's Mindful Awareness Research Center, as well as Spirit Rock's Mindful Yoga and Meditation Training. And to learn more, I invite you to look, check her your website, jillsatterfield.org, and we'll have a link, I'm sure, as part of the resources to this podcast. And Jill is a mentor with Jack Kornfield and Tara Brock's Mindfulness Meditation Teacher Certification Training Program. This is where I did my training and where she acted as my mentor. And I'm so very grateful to have met her. And even though I have graduated from my teacher training, I continue any opportunity I get to continue to learn from Jill, attending her classes and workshops and mentoring opportunities. So it is my deepest honor and pleasure to introduce people today in this conversation to Jill Satterfield and her insightful, embodied, accessible, and creative approaches to mindfulness meditation. Thank you for being here, Jill.
Thank you for inviting me. Very grateful to have an opportunity to talk to you, both of you, and also to your community. It's a pleasure, a real pleasure.
And it's so necessary because today, you know, that mindfulness has gotten into the conversation. You have all kinds of people popping up with things without foundation. So happy that we're going to be hearing more of the foundation and research and 35 years of experience that you've had.
Yeah. And well, longer practicing, but in teaching around that much. Yeah, I know it makes me, it's always funny to hear that many years of anything because I don't think I'm much older than that, but you know how it goes. Aging can bring hopefully some wisdom.
You know, when I was thinking back, Jill is one of the guest educators with EcoWisdom. When I was reflecting back on your talk to our community, you know, you were talking about sort of imagination and the power of imagination, visualization. We talk about it as well, of course, with the connecting with nature. And it just seems to work so well for many different reasons. And I mean, having this conversation with Charlotte is really meaningful too, because Charlotte is a poet and a creative minded person who also has done sort of community health initiatives on the ground, but also workshops related to creative writing and that kind of thing. So I know, and I've heard Charlotte perform her poetry. It's so powerful. Last time she read, I was in tears. But anyway, it's great to have this conversation because I think all three of us can appreciate the importance of creativity and visualization. And when we get stuck in ways to practice forest bathing or ways to practice mindfulness or meditation, and we don't make room for these alternatives, we are losing something, right? And it's not in part accessibility. Like we serve people who for parts of their day, for parts of their lives, you know, it's really hard to get out and about. They may be using mobility aids. They may, you know, on Saturday's program, we had someone who I know is spending probably about 75% of his time in bed due to a pressure sore. And he's been in this situation for over a year. So he was really happy to come and join us. All kinds of situations. So activating that imagination, it allows for inclusivity of people with disabilities or chronic illnesses, et cetera. But it's also so powerful.
And it also offers validation. When you were talking about 35 years, I have 45 years in nutrition and health education. I worked for Toronto Department of Public Health as a health promoter. And one day I was on my way back to the health department after doing a workshop for teens on stress. And a young woman flying, not yielding at an intersection, hit my car and knocked me to the side of the 405. And I had a spinal bruise and a brain hematoma. And pills. I wrote a poem about pills, pills, and pins. If only this guy's pen and pill could heal me, because they gave me so many pills, I would have been become a serious addict if I had taken them. I fortunately had a godmother in L.A. who's an actress and was working with a chiropractor. And my medical doctor said, quack, quack, quack. Well, that person put me back on my feet and those other healing energies. But I think what's really great about EcoWisdom, what's great about what you're doing, is raising the level of awareness among people. I just lost a friend in LA who would reach the point where she would rather go on to greater glory than endure the amount of painful remedies, I mean, painful approaches. And it's exciting for us to be able to share and make people, ordinary people, aware of the practices, the things that you're going to be talking about that you do. Making people aware that going out in nature is not as scary as going down and having someone give you codeine, fentanyl, just a whole list of five or six things to the point that people can't think. So I'm really happy for these opportunities to let people know and not let people think, oh, alternative is not as good, but alternative can save your life. So I'm excited to be helping to facilitate what you're talking about, because it's really important for people to know how legitimate it is. And either those, as you said, who want to become practitioners and those who just want to be relatives or friends who can encourage people to listen and hear about forest bathing and listen and hear about meditation and yoga. So I'm going to back out, but that's just why I spent 45 years in that. I've pushed aside all of that bureaucratic work, imagination. Reverend Michael Beckwith on this past Sunday at Agape in LA spoke about imagination and charge people to use their imagination as a best practice. So sipping up and going back. But what you both are doing and what these conversations are doing are really important for ordinary people to know that there is an alternative to the way that pain and discomfort is being handled.
You know, your talk about pain ties into this embodiment piece. Right. And often in our programs, people are talking about having either emotional pain or physical pain, right? And with the mindfulness piece is like making room for it, you know, and being with it, witnessing it, and like building that capacity, not to push it down, not to like drive it away, but to allow it to coexist with the beauty, wonder, and awe of the natural world. And I just want to pause and just open it up to Jill. Any thoughts around either the imagination piece or the embodiment and pain piece, if you want to share anything you like?
It's a wide net. Thank you. Well, let me start with imagination, since Charlotte was just talking about that. And I think every person on the planet has an imagination, first of all. And secondly, every person on the planet can utilize imagination to live their best life. Because I think when we become what is called in Buddhist psychology, fixed, that when we have a fixed view about anything, it's not helpful, let's say, it's harmful. And so even in someone who doesn't have the misfortune or fortunately doesn't have to cope with a chronic disease or disability or pain, anything that's chronic that keeps us from doing the things that we really want to do at times. You know, even if you can get along and you know, you feel relatively fine and don't have to care about your body too much and your mind is, you know, happy as a clam much of the time, or at least that you know of, it's still beneficial to have an imagination, because why live as we have been told when there's so many more opportunities and options to live a full life that might not look like everyone else's? And so we narrow our scope quite a bit when we think we need to do something like this or that or the other thing that our culture or even our parents or even our schools might have prescribed. And then I'm not sure we want to jump into the basket of medical prescriptions, but I think it helps us all to know that we can change our own minds, change our own hearts, and that we have agency with our bodies no matter what. And so imagination plays a huge role in that.
And I see that also tying into, as I hear you speak, challenging dominant societal norms about how things should be done, right?
Yeah.
And I just think about training to become a nature and forest therapy guide, and how with our eco-wisdom, we're like, because of some of the experiences I had where, you know, it just didn't quite fit in other people's minds that I could do the training and that I would require some access accommodations. So to shift people's, when we enter into the world of imagination, and I think that a lot of people with disabilities and chronic illness, how we navigate the world.
Oh, you have to be imaginative.
We require this, right?
Yeah.
Like I remember one of our participants was talking about how like, it's not a choice. Like, this is how we live, right?
Right.
We're always trying to like, okay, if I want to go out with a friend to a film, like, what are all the creative solutions? How am I going to get from here to there and how up? Like, what? He's just like, or I want to have a, you know, a party, you know, where's it going to be? What kind of food? Like, just what kind of lighting sound? Like, it just always stuff to be sorted out, and you have to approach it from this creative. So I think, in a sense, we're challenging creativity allows us, it's part of the process of challenging dominant ideas of how to do things and how to be. And so we can find through imagination a place of belonging just as we are, right? Mm-hmm. And moving through the world in creative and unique ways.
Yes, and upgrade our systems. You know, if it weren't for those of us that have, you know, had to navigate with imagination, just be a little bit more creative about how we're going to be doing what most people would think of as normal things, then there wouldn't be as much access as there is now. And we know that a lot more access is needed. And so we come up with ideas to make life simpler or more accessible or more enjoyable or understandable, depending on what the condition is that we're working with. So we help each other in that way. It's really a very compassionate response, not just for ourselves, but for all of us.
And I know this is a little bit of a side topic, but it really is woven into a lot of what eco-wisdom is doing, because we're based on the land. Eco-grief. How do we envision moving forward, moving through eco-grief, finding solutions without feeling overwhelmed, right? I think there's a place for creativity and imagination there too.
Absolutely. And also to be present, because one of the things that I loved that Joanna Macy talked about and I've forgotten, it was some talk of hers that I read, it was how we don't want to plan. I mean, we need to plan ahead, right? We need to use discernment and wisdom so that we're not continuing down a road that maybe there are ways to change in terms of the environment, let's say. But we also want to be present with the environment that we still have. And so enjoying nature that's still here rather than just mourning the loss of it in the future, I think we need to do a little bit of both. And so there are still trees and flowers and grass and birds and clouds to varying degrees. Of course, there's loss, but what we still have, we can appreciate, and what we still have, we can meet with and become one with, you know, and really open joy in the heart because of. So it's important not to forget what's here. And that partially is what mindfulness can open us to, is to be in the present moment, not always projecting into the future or having regret about the past. Oh, it used to be like this. Well, it's not anymore. I mean, as harsh as that might sound, so we become more and more used to this is what we have. And then maybe use the imagination, hopefully, to say, well, let's not go that road that's predicted. What if we went around it like this? Or what if we tried it like that? You know, and we do that out of necessity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is important about mindfulness is legitimizing it. I was in the Nature Guide program in the very first practice of self-care. We are so distracted from self-care, making it almost like, well, do that on your own time. It's selfish. But could you speak a little bit about mindfulness and self-care?
Sure. Well, I think one of the things that you mentioned a little while ago, Charlotte, was alternative therapies. And so I think we want to have both and. We want to have a medical system that we hopefully can trust and rely on some. But there's not one protocol that meets everything that we might need. There's not one person that meets everything that we might need, not one school, et cetera, not one food. So I think it's important to open our minds to what do I need and what could I benefit from? And so that right there is self-care. And if someone's saying that that's extra and we can't get out of bed because we're not feeling well, because we weren't eating well, we didn't know that we needed to cut out some of the things that were harmful or caused inflammation or, you know, whatever our condition could be detrimental to our physical or mental well-being, then we don't know to stop or change or look elsewhere. And so education is really important. Information is really important. But also just listening to ourselves is really important because, well, maybe if I eat a lot of cheese, I'm going to be blowing my nose all day. So maybe I won't do that. You know, I'll cut out dairy, for instance. But it's just asking ourselves, well, how am I feeling right now? And what might be the best way for me to support myself, given what I know, and where might I learn more skillful means to feel a little better or stretch what I think might be a limit into limitlessness so that I can actually do my job, so that I can actually show up for my family, so that I can actually go to the dinner that I've been invited to or host one, you know? So self-care is essential. And mindfulness brings us to knowing what is right now. And when we connect with the present moment, we're connecting with ourselves. And connecting with ourselves means that we have the opportunity to take care of ourselves. And it also then opens us to the fact, really, that taking care of ourselves is taking care of all of us. So it really kind of doesn't matter what direction we go. We could be having intention to serve others. That serves us. We grow and learn from empathy and compassion. So it's really a two-way street, but we need to include ourselves in all the equations of life, not in a selfish way, but in a self-meaning way, a self-validating way. We do matter. We're one of many, and all of us matter, really. So mindfulness brings us to understanding what we might need right now, what the current causes and conditions are, and how we might take a little bit better care.
I'd like to jump in and talk a little bit about, you know, my experience with my journey of finding what I call wholeness rather than cure or wellness necessarily, but I tried everything. I was doing everything, you name it, every type of physiotherapy, occupational therapy, shiatsu therapy, like you name it. I was doing it all. I was really trying to be well as I could. And at a certain point, I was at a critical point. I had been hit by a truck and my specialist said, you are at risk of a full relapse, which would mean going back to using the wheelchair that I was using for a number of years. And I was like, what is it that I need? And this is where like the self-care, this deep listening, and it was going on retreat in nature. And through mindfulness, it allowed me to sort of reconceptualize, to find these new meanings. What is it? Like really deep questions, right? Like, what am I doing here? And how am I connected to this plant and this tree? And how is this tree connected to me? Like the interdependence of it all. And to see that reflected back to me through the natural world and feeling this sense of wholeness emerging over time in me and sense of enoughness and deep connection with the power of connection and finding wellness in all of that. And those were things that I came to understand through mindfulness practices in nature. Mm-hmm. Like I think that if I was just doing those other therapies, like the physiotherapy, occupational therapy, like there was no opportunity for me to just reframe and come at it from a very different place and say, what am I doing here? Where is my place? what is my purpose? What is my, and to see myself in the eyes of the tree reassuring me that I was okay the way I was. Not all trees are standing straight, you know?
What I learned from your nature walk was not only that, but trees reach out to each other. I was terrified of driving with my son in California up to Palmdale because you have to go through this thing that's 14 miles, there's no lights, and then 14 miles of curves. And he drives kind of fast. And I was so in knots. But in that personal care, when you talk about feeling different, feeling something different from the trees, when you gave us that sit spot, I thought, this is ridiculous. Honestly, Jill, I thought, I have met some people that are way out there. But in following it, it was amazing because when I sat there, it's just listen and imagine, I really developed meta with the tree. And also, I couldn't go to a forest. I'm in Los Angeles. I thought there are no trees. Well, when I looked around, there were lots of trees. There was one tree in the front. I'm just sitting still because I think from children, kids get so much distraction. If they, if they sit still and seem to be looking out a window, they're criticized for daydreaming. But being told, it's okay to just sit and do nothing and look at a tree, I really began to feel the power of trees and the energy. So I think being able to talk about this, when you talk about mindfulness, some people have got mindful courses and they've outlined things they've so over-outlined it that you don't want to do it. But by the simplicity that you've talked about, just saying it's all right. It's all right to think about you, how your heart feels, how things smell when you're sitting still out in nature, even when you're at a bus stop and there's a tree there and all this busyness is around you, that you still can come to mindfulness. So I'm so excited that you both are finding so many ways to teach this to people.
Yeah. And so much of it is connection. Right. So again, if we connect to ourselves, we connect to each other because we have many more similarities than we do differences. If we connect to a tree, we connect to ourselves. Trees are completely connected. They're completely interconnected, and then the more we learn about fungi and we don't know half of what's going on right now, which is actually kind of cool because it means that we can dream. And who knows, maybe even what we're dreaming is real or real on one level. I mean, quantum physics has thrown many things on its head that we thought we knew or were proven. And, there's room for both. And so when we define ourselves so tightly, or we define our world so tightly, there's very little growth and substantive change in a direction that includes more connection and kindness and compassion and caring for each other and this, very delicate, beautiful planet that we live on. So we want to connect to anything that we can, really, one moment at a time, and then we feel more whole. We feel our place here, right now, together. We don't isolate, which is terrible for our systems, our nervous system, and for each other. But we, we want to really recognize the unseen as much as the seen. The unseen. I mean, a lot of connection is unseen. I mean, when we talk about trees, even, it's like we don't naturally see the root system of trees or how the salmon moving down a stream feeds the tree roots. There's just so much interdependence in nature. And we think we're different than that. And we're really not.
I'd like to circle back to pain, bringing connection to pain. When I first acquired my severe disability, I had over 3 years, not one moment of a break of chronic severe pain. And I just remember connecting to this blossom in my backyard and just being with the blossom and then looking at the light and looking at the texture. And I just felt I was in the company of this blossom, and it made room for, I wasn't pushing away the pain, but through the connection, I felt like the flower was helping me to be with the pain. And I've had similar experiences with trees too. And we've noticed that because research has been done with our participants who volunteered to be interviewed and surveyed, that they're reporting less pain after participating in our accessible nature well-being programs. There is something, and you talk about like the things that we can't see, there is something that we all co-create together in these programs. We're together for 2.5 hours. Like that's a big chunk of time. We have a break in the middle and we end with the tea ceremony. Last time I was out with a big bonfire, Dave built it and we offered white pine tea and I described what it was smelling like and tasting like to our participants online and all kinds of people participating in offering their gifts throughout the program. And we ended with one person, Karma, who gave this wonderful, beautiful blessing. And I said to her, like, I guess it was like the day before, you know, whatever you want to do is fine. She goes, oh yeah, I'm just going to meditate and see what comes up. And it's like, and I said to her, oh yeah, I meditated in the morning. I'm like, what are we going to do for tea ceremony? Because I usually create like a mandala. And I said to her, oh, Karma, guess what? I meditated. I came up with this idea of having this big bonfire outside. That's what came to me. And we came up with these beautiful words and we co-create the program. We co-create this experience that we can't see all those things that connect us to each other, but it's just like those mycelium networks that's underneath the earth that connect the trees, right? And they support each other, nurturing, like offering some nutrients over here to this tree that needs it. And like, we're doing that for each other and we can't see it, but we feel it, don't we, Charlotte?
Absolutely feel it. And the difference, you know, you've sat through things where people have met 6 times over 3 months to plan something that was going to be 2 hours. And you had a very exciting time of pre-planning, then having a preview where we went through the program and it was so simple. And then it worked out where we really felt like we were in the room, not in these boxes, but everybody from different levels of challenges, or different levels of communication, everyone was welcomed. So it made other people feel like, wow, but if someone who has to use a device, if someone has to have different types of hearing systems are set up, if they can participate and be welcomed, I can be welcome too. So it helps you to be more patient, as opposed to some planning sessions that you're on with people and everybody's so uptight and they're mean to each other. I just love the example of every time that there's a forest bathing, there's so much love and it, there were no fights. So this process, when you said some things people take because they want all of the certifications and dots and things from the states, another state because they just want to improve their practice. This 2.5 hour, the accessible wellness programs, whether it's outside or indoors, whether it's all day or 3 hours of a day, it really helps people just see there's ways for us to cooperate and there's ways for everybody to have access and everybody to contribute. So I think it will make other people in other meetings and things that they're involved with be more compassionate, be more excited about making sure everyone can participate.
Yeah, and you mentioned having a bonfire. And I find that, well, we know that imagining something has a physiological impact on our bodies, okay? So if we're not in front of the bonfire or we're seeing it online and then we remember it and think about it later, it still has an effect, a physiological effect. So we can imagine being in the forest if we're not. We can imagine being at the ocean if we're not. We can imagine a big sky mind, even when we feel very narrow and tight and anxious or irritated or whatever. And it changes everything, which I find really, really fascinating. So if we have access, everybody's had access to nature, hopefully a little bit, enough to be able to recall it. Or we can look at, you know, pictures or see things on screen now or on a movie or on television. And that can have the same kind of, we will have this a similar response as if we're actually there, which is really, really full of hope and gives us all agency that I think we didn't really know that we had.
Right.
I think it's very empowering when I describe some of the neuroscience behind that, you know, for participants who have restrictions physically, to know that they have options, they have choices, that they can be engaged in self-care in this way, and they can experience benefits, mm-hmm. that we know that they can experience benefits. And I find it so fascinating because people will say, oh, I was watching, because I create these nature videos, and many of them are either from the EcoWisdom Forest Preserve itself. So people develop like a relationship and emotional tie to that land. But I also went out to BC and had some people take some videos out there, and I took some videos. So people can either connect to one kind of nature or another. And they talk about how when they see something, they can smell it.
Yeah. It's great.
And then they talk about smelling things. Like, I see the fire, I can smell the smoke, right? And so it is fascinating where, you know, one scent is paired with another scent. And so we can trigger one with another. And then, it's just, I love the potentiality in that. It's so empowering for people who, you know, are trying to manage their self-care. And the other thing I love about forest bathing is it's free, right? Like, we can learn these techniques. I mean, it's an issue, right? Because most people with disabilities live below the poverty line. I'm sorry, but it's like, it's true. It's an equity issue. And so we can support each other. And like, that's a unique sort of model and approach that EcoWisdom is taking on, is like, we're using this as peer support.
I think the other thing that's great is, if we think about our introduction to the literature, it's, everything is scary about the forest. You know, we have Smokey the Bear, we have Little Red Riding Hood. And so I think more and more inviting people to come to the session, talking about the sessions, help people to not be fearful of the forest, and cooperation, where, you know, there are Indigenous people that are sharing and teaching people about the roots and teaching people other ways to prevent fires, or to, you know, redirect rather than setting a fire. They have a practice where they set a fire to stop fires, but there are other practices. So I think just these gatherings and saying, wow, that much can be accomplished by a few people. Suppose we, on another weekend, just use this model and we went out to talk about XYZ, something that we can solve, not all the things we can't solve. It gives us a great hope that living with the climate in the future will be different from the dire things that people are predicting.
And we tap into this collective wisdom when we're quiet, when we're not so busy, so distracted, or so thinking that we can't connect. You know, I mean, that right there is it's like a tourniquet for any kind of opening of the heart. And so I often marvel, and I have since I was a child, at who came up knowing that this mushroom would cure this condition, or that this herb was okay to eat and this one wasn't. You know, I'm sure there were some deaths, but people, you know, we've connected through time. This wisdom, this knowing, this integration, this connection with nature has saved our species. But who were the first people that connected? I don't think it was one or two. I think it was many all over the world, probably at different places at similar times. But somebody had to listen. You know, when you talk about like Native American practices, that's a deep listening. All of the Indigenous practices that I'm aware of involve incredibly deep listening, and maybe even plants to help them, plant medicine to help them deeply listen. But whatever it is, we receive when the channel is open. And so how do we open our channels? Partially through silence, you know, partially through just looking at the tree, or sitting on the beach and watching the ocean, just connecting.
How do practices like yoga help with that type of connection?
That's a good question. I never really used yoga to learn how to connect with my own body on one level. It was a very micro level. Just really being able to feel, to be in my body and feel the tip of a toe, or the, you know, right shoulder blade, or exactly where my breath was at any given moment, and if it was on the right side or the left side. So it was real micro levels of somatic connection, but it wasn't a connection of the heart. yoga practice wasn't for me. And so when I started to practice meditation, that expanded my connection with my body, or between my body, heart, and mind exponentially, you know. So yoga was a way for me to just be in the body, but it was, for me anyway, it was missing the mental emotional component that meditation added. Like, I connected to myself, how I was feeling about my body, for instance, which was fairly brutal at first, because I didn't like my body because it was in so much pain and all I wanted to do was change it or get out of it. And over time and many retreats, I was able to, and you don't have to do many retreats to do this, but this is just was my path. I connected to, okay, I have a body that isn't so well and is in you know, fairly acute chronic pain most of the time. And it's mine, but it's also a body that's experiencing this. And so there was the personal side of it, but there was the non-personal aspect of having a body that wasn't well and that was in pain. And so it gave me more of a view rather than no view of how I could be in a body that was not well and with pain. And that opened my imagination, actually. So it wasn't all about me. It was actually just noticing the phenomenon of nature that a body is. The body is a phenomenon of conditioned nature. All things are that we know of. So I had to get to know that to be able to then eventually take care of myself and not take it personally and blame myself for what I was feeling, you know, because that caused, you know, a great wedge in my heart. So the yoga practice was invaluable. I still practice it every day, but I do more restorative poses and practices that help balance my nervous system. And I do a lot of breathing practices because that to me is the most important thing that we can do, is connect to the breath and practice different kinds of breathing practices to balance the nervous system, to connect to the vagal nerve, you know, all the aspects that help us feel a little bit better and connected in general. Breath is quite sacred in that way, can be. Even for people that don't breathe very well. Hmm. And this is where imagination has come in. You know, when I was teaching in hospitals, there were people that were in bed, you know, couldn't move, were ambulatory, had lots of different conditions, lots of comorbid conditions. People that had lots and lots of different kinds of trauma, different addictions, you know. And, you know, how do you offer things when one person has COPD and one person was choked and has that trauma in their body, and one person, you know, feels like they can't do anything but take the drugs or the medicines that have been given, you know, how do we try to meet each other in those environments and with those different conditions? Well, I think it's through imagination. That's what I found anyway. And so I would teach people how to imagine their breath going down to their feet. Now, this seems normal these days, but this was, you know, 30 years ago. And, you know, some people looked at me side eye and some people crossed their eyes, but I would say, you know, imagine breathing into your feet, imagine breathing in and out just the right side of your body, things like that. Well, we're not really just breathing in and out to the right side of our bodies. And we're not just breathing, or we aren't really breathing into our feet. What are we doing? We're moving awareness. And when you move consciousness and awareness, you're connecting wherever it is that you're imagining that you are. There's a connection there. That's what changes everything. And that's empowering. That's empowering. We can connect to any part of our body that we want to, but a lot of times we need support and ideas of how to do that. And that way we might be, you know, ambulatory, but we're moving awareness. We're creating a sense of agency. We develop agency. Oh, I can soften the tissue over here in my left shoulder if I really breathe or imagine I'm breathing into it. Or I'm going to bring a cloud into my chest so that my chest softens. Or I'm going to imagine the salt air coming into my belly and revive, you know, the cramping in my belly, or, you know, what have you. This is a huge benefit and accessible to anyone.
This is so great. I just am really enjoying listening to you speak, Jill. I remember this one participant in our programs. We have three central invitations, nature connection invitations. And the second one is a nature-based meditation, guided meditation. And so we did this one where it was a guided meditation on the beach and the sand was warm. And the sound of the waves were there, right? And I had some images up, but, you know, just a lot was just letting people use their imagination and find their way there on the beach, whatever kind of body they had, you know, just sort of saying, it's up to you how you're connecting with this warm sand, but whatever makes sense to you, right? It might be your hands. It might be you're laying down. Maybe you're in your wheelchair and you're just looking out at the sand or whatever it is.
Yeah.
This one woman who had multiple back surgeries, and she's like, I didn't think it was going to be possible to have pain relief in my back, but it happened. Right. She left that energy, right? That openness. She found a way to release something.
That's right.
Connection.
Yeah. Oh, so beautiful. When I wasn't well initially and I was doing a lot of meditation practice, I couldn't visualize below my navel. It was kind of like a dark hole. That's where the pain was and the chronic condition. And I thought, well, what if I could imagine flower petals in my belly? You know, let me try to do that and just sort of change the scene in a way. And I tried and I tried and I tried and I wasn't able to. And then I just kept trying. It was like I was superimposing my imagination on my body. It was almost like a little bit of the flowers were in my mind, not necessarily in my body. So I don't want anybody to think that I actually saw them in my belly necessarily. But I started picturing my belly as a bowl, a glass bowl with flower petals at the bottom of the bowl. And with my breath, and of course, I'm imagining this breath, I would try to swirl the flower petals around in the bowl. Again, I wasn't really, you know, picturing it in my belly. I was picturing a glass bowl. I was picturing the flower petals. I was imagining my breathing doing this. And little by little, I could. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm healing. And it wasn't long after that, I had not had peristalsis for a number of years, that it came back.
Wow.
I was picturing these bright colored flower petals in my belly over and over and over again. And what I think I was doing really was I was conditioning my body to be different than it was. Now, even if I hadn't started peristalsis again, or I hadn't relieved pain, you know, for moments and moments that I did, it wouldn't matter because it made me feel better. And it was something I could do at any given moment. And I think partially the reason I felt better was because I was softening.
Yeah.
You know, I was softening. When we're in pain, we tighten.
Mm.
Emotional pain, mental pain, physical pain, all aspects of pain, we contract. And that's not good for any of our system. And so when I would be using my imagination in different ways, I was softening, I was opening, I was widening the body, my mind, my heart. And I think that helps us to heal some, whether it's exactly as we will hope, who knows. But I do think the sky is the limit. So we can't really let someone tell us you're never going to heal or this is never going to be like this, because then that automatically does affect us. Why not? Okay, let's let that go. Say, well, okay, that's okay if you think that. I don't need to think that. Let me play around. Let me see what I can do. There's great freedom and amazing growth in that. Amazing. We've known it. I think the three of us know that, right?
Yes, and the exciting thing is being able to share, you know, the media that we have now. People can share through a Zoom, we can share through an afternoon in the park, but the more people know that there is power in their imagination, the more people know that when you finish a surgery and a team comes out and tells you, well, it's going to be 3 months and it's going to be really hard, that we have a better answer. And just the more we can let people know about programs like Eco Wisdom, know programs about the contemplative photography, contemplative, all types of contemplative, just thinking about yourself, that it's worth it to think about yourself. It's worth it to imagine. But the better, you know, the better we can make each other's and other people's lives be, because people have grown to be so fearful of pain because they're these people that just start. So we need to be the interceptors to make these kinds of conversations available, that people don't have to go and spend $10 to get to hear us talk, that they can, through the radio stations, through the podcast programs we present, they can turn in and they can learn. Going to your websites, I'd like both of you to tell your websites again so that anyone that hears a part of this and wants to know more, they would be able to connect.
Jill?
Sure. My website is jillsatterfieldmyname.org. And I think, Charlotte, I just want to stress one thing that you said that's really important for everybody to hear over and over and over again, is that we can give ourselves permission to be maybe slightly different than what we've been told or taught. And that permission is what gives us the connection, not only a connection to ourselves, but to each other, because there is no normal.
Right.
Get rid of that idea.
And I think family and friends who come to visit someone, that they also have permission to ask for music, to ask if you could bring a plant in. Sometimes people put themselves so much under, oh, but the doctor said, but oh, you have agency, you have a mouth, you can say. You know, research has shown that hearing music from the forest or seeing pictures from the forest help people to feel better. That just using agency, that we have these inalienable rights in a democracy. And so one of them is to speak up for these things that are other beneficial, not alternative or all the other words that maybe. I had a doctor tell me after talking about my mother's cancer, and I said, what about nutrition? He said, oh, if you want to throw a little broccoli on the plate, I don't mind. I wish that moment to be Muhammad Ali. Because it was such so snide. But I think having the bounce back, the more people hear about, you know, these programs, hear what you're doing, look on websites, like we're going to hear the Eco Wisdom website again, that you have more that you can bring to the conversation. You have a right to bring things like that to the conversation as a supporter of someone, of yourself, but of someone else who might be going through pain and suffering and could have an option to feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I know we need to wrap up. I just want to say that, you know, one of our recent EcoWisdom community gatherings where we pull together our guides and we hear how people are using their guide training. One of our guides is using what she's learned to support people through eco grief. So she's incorporating into nature ecology walks but using the mindful nature connection to sustain engagement, because they were noticing with their organization that people were getting burned out and leaving. And so people, it's really taken off. That's one thing that's happened. And another person was talking about bringing a plant into a hospital setting where this woman is in isolation, has contagious, difficult to treat tuberculosis, contagious. So is in isolation for months in the hospital. And so our guide is there bringing in plants, bringing little pieces, what do you call the, like the little piece, and then you have the roots, the tap roots that come and the clippings. Right. And so it's all about like nurturing, right? Nurturing. She's engaging this woman in nurturing for this little plant and then watching it grow and using it as a centerpiece, a beautiful, living, green, you know, relationship with this green, energetic plant. You know, these are things we can do. We can bring this into our lives, and we can bring it into the lives of our loved ones when we see that they're in a medical crisis or they're in an emotional, whatever it's going on, right? So yeah, we can again sort of push away these dominant societal norms and say, yeah, but what about you know, how about we do this instead, or we do this not instead, but in conjunction with.
Right.
Often right. the case is right. Right. We want some nature sounds. We want a room with a view of a tree. You know, like these kinds of things.
Right. Yeah. yeah. Sliver of sky. yeah. Yeah. Really so important.
Carrie, again, share how you connect with EcoWisdom.
Our website is ecowisdom.ca. And I'm also on Instagram. So it's ecowisdom_forest_preserve. Yeah. So I talk about my life in the forest, and share photos and videos. Yeah, there.
And the photos and videos can show you deer running in the dark because they've got lights posted outside that capture things that you don't have to wait hours to standing with the camera to see.
That's right. We've got like 3 field cameras. We move them around different parts of the property. So we got wolves. We're showing wolves the other day.
Oh, I should say, you know, I have on my website a practice called Breath of Nature, which is imagining breathing in the ocean air or forest clear, crisp sky at the top of a mountain, and moving it to different areas of the body to help promote some softness, some rejuvenation, some regeneration.
So the name of that, if they're going to your website and they're looking for
it. There's a page of recordings, audio recordings, and that one is called Breath of Nature.
Perfect.
That's wonderful.
What a lovely gift. Thank you so much. I'm sure that members of our community will be very interested in looking that up and being guided by you in that way.
Pleasure.
Well, I'm grateful to have been in the presence of hearing and imagining you validating that it's all right to imagine. It's a wonderful part of healing. Talking about the community that evolves when people that are, all of us are challenged in some way, but when we come together and we share the abilities we have, miracles can happen. A lot of mountains can be moved. So if you're out there wondering, what can you do? Listen to this program, go onto the website, look out for where there's going to be another nature, accessible nature wellness program. And do you have a program or series of classes coming up, Jill, that people might
want to? I do, yeah. In December, I have 5 days of very short practices, hopefully very accessible, breathing practices that utilize the imagination, but also are soothing for the central nervous system, and a guided meditation practice. And that's on my website under workshops and classes. Yes, I do lots of different programs. It's all up there, but that one is coming up to help us sort of more gracefully glide into what might be holiday season where somebody lives, or just being in an environment that, you know, maybe isn't your most comfortable or fun with families, if that's the case, but different things that we can do for ourselves that which will really radically change the day. It'll change the way we are internally, which changes how we are with whatever is in our environment. So yeah, five short accessible practices to help us be with what is, whatever that what is.
That's 45 minutes over 5 days, right?
That's right. Each day is 45 minutes. Yeah. They're short.
Perfect.
Short practices. Yeah.
That'll be of real interest, I think.
And they'll be recorded. So if you miss a day, you can listen to it later, and you'll also have access to the recordings, all the recordings.
Awesome.
It'll be helpful.
Yeah.
Well, we want to thank you for joining us today for EcoWisdom Conversations, conversations on how you can enjoy better self-care and how you can join with others to make the world a better place, to imagine a better world through living, through your imagination, your faith, your spirituality, and just your willingness to learn and share what you have heard. I'm Charlotte Farrell, the host, and I'll see you again, hear you again next time on EcoWisdom Conversations.
Love time, poem time, love time, poem time.
love.